Do you or someone you love wish you had a better job? Want to be happier on your current job? Don't even have a job? Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko.
Should you be a stay-at-home dad? It's not such an obvious choice. Of course, the, if you will, politically correct thing is, of course you can. But like many things, beneath the headlines, beneath the sound bites, there is complexity. And one of the benefits of public radio and long-form radio like this is that we can explore things in fuller dimension. And not only explore them, but involve you in them. So we're going to have three separate sources of input. One is me, one is my wife, Dr. Barbara Nemko, and the third is you. So we're going to kind of lay out what we think are some of the arguments for the first 10 minutes or so, and then invite you to call in and weigh in. So first, I guess I should introduce it, if I'm polite, Dr. Barbara Nemko. You don't like me to give the long accolade. So why don't you, for the first time, why don't you give your own, how would you like to be introduced? What do you, really, what do you want to say about yourself as your introduction?
That I'm the Napa County Superintendent of Schools and a passionate believer in using digital devices to enhance learning.
That sounds like a cliche. That's like a superintendent. That sounds like one of those.
Amazing. That's what I am.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, I don't know. Anyway.
And you're proud also, grandmother of two.
And you also played an amazing role in my show Odd Man Out, which I just watched the video. I was honestly dispirited about it. I thought I was great. I was only okay. I was good to okay. You were awesome. So I'm saying that to everybody. Oh, by the way, it'll be done. We're doing our show Odd Man Out in the San Francisco Civic Center. Barbara Nemko, Martin Nemko, and Danny Beam, the winner of the Bay Area Theater Critics Award for Best Performer, 5-time nominee, in addition, an amazing singer. I play the piano, tell stories. I really am an odd man out. Barbara is not, and Barbara puts me in my place many times in the show. It is going to be sponsored by the San Francisco Public Library in the Corrett Auditorium, so you can just Google Odd Man Out and Nemko, and you'll eventually find that, and it's free. It is being sponsored by the library, so we'd love to see you. It's September 17th. No money, just come. But I think you have to register because they're expecting that it will fill the auditorium. So just go do that. And
it's
so,
pretty amazing that it's at no cost to people who want to come, because we just filled Lucky Penny when we did it up here in Napa, and everybody paid $25 a ticket.
Suckers,
so this
no.
is the deal of the century.
Anyway, all right, enough of that. So the theme for topic one is, should you be a stay-at-home dad? And just coincidentally, we watched on video, we watched The Intern, the Robert De Niro and Hathaway movie, and in which she, of course, again, politically correct, she is the CEO, brilliant, inspired, with just enough minor flaws to make her seem human, but she's awesome. And she has a stay-at-home husband, a guy who gave up his great career for her, and he is there struggling, overwhelmed with you know, playing with the child, Play-Doh, and cooking, and begging his wife, oh, would you please, I'd love to have dinner with my friends. It was like, just a reverse role reversal of stereotype. But certainly he brought out some of the challenges that exist in sacrificing your career for somebody. And what I thought I would do, Barb, to kick things off, I like internal dialogues. I like point-counterpoint. Maybe it's because Philosophy Talk is the show right before this, you know, the Socratic dialogue thing. But I want to take about, maybe it's 3-4 minutes to read this Socratic dialogue. This is an internal dialogue between in a stay-at-home, a guy who's deciding whether he should, like the guy in the movie The Intern, should he scrap his career to be a stay-at-home dad? And he goes back and forth on the yes, I should, no, I shouldn't, with all the reasons. And then afterwards, I would like you to hold forth and give your reactions, additions, subtractions, disagreements, arguments, whatever. We'll go back and forth, and then we'll go to the calls. How's that sound?
Sounds fine.
Okay. So, the person says to himself, I got a good job in human resources, pretty humane, but I'm still a kind of a paper pusher. And worse, I'm kind of burning out. I think I'd find more meaning if I were a stay-at-home dad for a while. And then his alter ego says, hey, Most men get tired of that pretty quickly. Then you're going to have a hard time convincing an employer to hire you. They're going to wonder how committed you are to work. And the person then says, but women take time off to be a stay-at-home mom. The alter ego says, but that's more common. When a man does it, they may wonder, what was wrong with him that made him take the time off? Was he sick? Did he get fired? Is he, and like you said yourself, pretty burned out? The person says, those are good points, but I think I'd be able to show them that I wasn't messed up, that I merely wanted to be a good feminist husband and support my wife in her out of home work. But now my child is older, so I'm ready to go back to work. Doesn't that make sense? Your alter ego says, maybe it'll work, and maybe it won't. Compare yourself to some if your other candidates who have not done that, not doing this tap dance. Isn't the employer who's trying to reduce risk isn't going to say, I think I'll take the other person? You know, and there's one thing for sure, that being a stay-at-home dad certainly isn't going to enhance your career. Remember, that is the main reason that women on average earn less than men. They take more time off of parenting. Studies of women show that women, single women, 25 to 34, make 100% on the dollar, not 79 cents. It's only when they stay home and have children and can drop out of the workforce. That's going to affect you too, dude. Person, hey, not every decision is about enhancing career. My wife and I can afford it, at least sort of. So many women say their favorite experience is watching their kids grow up. I might really enjoy it. And the alter ego says, yeah, you can afford it now, but what if some unexpected problem happens, like Jessica gets sick or whatever? Besides, it's not all about what would be pleasurable for you. And the person, of course not. I think it's good for my kid to see both parents at some point be the primary caregiver. And as I said, it'll help Jessica with her career. That's important. This is not 1950. I want to help her with her career. Alter ego says, how sure are you that she really wants you to be the primary caregiver? If you're really being honest with yourself, she's more bonded with the baby than you are. And the person says, that's true, but I'm wondering if that would change if I were a stay-at-home dad. Alter ego says, well, that's another maybe, another risk. For millennia, we hear about the mother-child bond, not so much about the father-child bond. And remember also that if you become a stay-at-home dad, Jessica is going to expect you to do a lot more of the domestic chores, cleaning the house, food shopping, cooking. You don't exactly like doing that stuff. And you care a lot less about making house beautiful or creating Martha Stewart meals than Jessica does. The person says, that is not the only good way to be a good homemaker. I'm efficiency-oriented, so it'll be fun to see how quickly I can get the house cleaned and prepare healthy meals. Alter ego says, you're romanticizing. You ever see how haggard most housewives look and feel? There's a reason many housewives end up being substance abusers. Remember those Valium housewives? And even if they don't, you heard a number of our stay-at-home housewife friends that complain that their brains have gone to mush. The person says, I won't do that. I'll stay stimulated. I'll take classes to stay up in my field. Maybe I'll start a book club or join a book club, whatever. The alter ego says, are you really that motivated? The same demotivation you're feeling at work is likely going to keep you from doing those things. After a day of taking care of the baby, cleaning the house, shopping, cooking, errands, and then Jessica coming home and wanting you to, quote, active listen about her day or process some issue, I'd guess you won't want to do anything other than slouch in front of the TV or a video game with a beer or three. And that's only if you have one kid. Jessica's been talking about having two. And before you got married, she says, oh, two or three kids seems about right. Person says, I'll cross that bridge when I get to it. In the meantime, I have just 1 6-month-old. I need to think about all of this. So, dear listeners, if you were in this guy's position, what would you do? And why? Do you know anybody facing that choice? What would you say or ask that man? Would what you'd say be different if it were a woman? First, Barbara, I want to address all those questions to you. What are your reactions? And then we will go to the phones.
I think one of the common misconceptions that people have when they think about being a stay-at-home mom or dad is that it would be not going to work. Being a stay-at-home parent is work. No question about it. It's a lot of work. And a lot of the things that people don't like about work, that sometimes some jobs are repetitive or boring, don't challenge you, they're not stimulating, are absolutely and equally true if you're working at home taking care of a child. So the notion that, well, I don't really like my job, so I think I'll be much more fulfilled by doing this. A lot of what you do in the house is boring stuff. Cleaning is not exciting. Dusting, sweeping, going to the grocery store yet again. And now it's interspersed with a baby who sometimes is going to be absolutely adorable and sometimes is going to be crying and cranky and miserable. And you're trying to comfort the baby, but you still have to do all the other work aspects of this job of staying at home and being a caretaker.
And if you were, you know, you're an employer, you employ 200 people at your Napa County Office of Education.
260, but who's counting?
Okay, well, yes, bureaucracy always expands. So
let's not be snarky.
Yeah, but it's, you know, I've never heard of a government agency.
If you do more programs for more kids in more schools, you need more employees.
I've never heard of a government agency shrinking. I only hear of it expanding. And I've looked at the U.S. debt clock. The U.S. Do you know that the U.S. debt, federal debt, is now $20 trillion. $19.4 to be accurate, but $1 trillion. And as of like 10 or 20 years ago, it was less than half that. So, you know, anyway, but if you were putting on your employer hat, if you were looking at two identical candidates, one of whom, and they both had 5 years of experience, of relevant experience, they're both identical, except that one was a stay-at-home dad, took 5 years off, say, to be a stay-at-home dad until the kid went to kindergarten, and the other worked straight through, would you have a bias in either direction as to which to hire?
I don't think I would have an inherent bias, but the work world is changing so quickly, technology is changing so quickly, that in 5 years it's very easy to have your skills become obsolete, and that's where that candidate would face a huge negative.
What about the commitment issue? The notion is we all know that, you know, for many people, being a mom or a dad is one of the most important things in their life, and it's also one of the most draining. And if a person chooses to make a 5-year commitment, which is a very typical amount of stay-at-home time from birth to when the kid goes off to kindergarten, if a person making that long-term commitment, aren't they going to be as less interested in work than they otherwise would be? That they would also have lost their network, not just technology, but part of many careers is knowing people, who to call when you have a problem, who to collaborate with, whatever. Isn't it really quite likely that the stay-at-home mom or stay-at-home dad is going to pay an enormous price when he or she is trying to go back in the workplace? It is like kind of like the Roach Motel. You can check in to being a stay-at-home mom and dad, but you can't check out. Do you think that's overstating the case, or do you agree?
I think it depends on the job. If it was something, obviously lots of our jobs are to do with children and child care, it might not be as much of a problem. If it's a higher level managerial administrative job, then it could be.
Let's say you have people who are bookkeepers in your department.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they also, when they have a problem, it's really helpful if they have somebody they can network with and call to get the answer. It's more helpful, yes, on the technology side. And also, if they're exhausted from being, you know, a really involved parent, especially if the kid is under 5 or 6, is exhausted after time. They're the ones with the dark circles under their eyes. So isn't it true that even for a low-level job, all things being equal, given you have, you know, unfortunately for job seekers, in this era of the Internet where an employer can, by using just Craigslist, let alone the hundreds of other job sites, as well as their, you know, sending an email to their 100 closest friends or posting on Facebook, they can get hundreds of applicants. Wouldn't most employers not endure that red flag when there's so many other candidates they could choose?
Well, again, I think there are two factors going on here. You said if someone is employed as just a bookkeeper, there is no such thing anymore of just.
But you know what I mean. You're talking about high level positions. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
You don't have some paper and pencil set of books. It's very technology oriented, and in the last couple of years, we have completely changed systems. We've been trying out systems. There are a lot of problems with the systems because they're new. Teaching people how to use them. So somebody coming in who had been home for 5 years and has no knowledge of any of it wouldn't be very useful for us. We would be looking for someone who's had experience with one or more of these newer systems and has had experience in both the training of employees that they work with and the experience in finding and solving some of the problems. And those are technology problems.
Would there be really a difference in the way you would treat two equivalents? One was a stay-at-home mom and the other is a stay-at-home dad. As I have made it in that internal dialogue, stay-at-home moms is more expected. Partly, you know, whether it is oxytocin and estrogen that is creating bonding or social conditioning, social construction, whatever. In the end, women are generally more bonded to their kids. And therefore, even when they go back to work, we all know that many more women, they talk about with their children in the bathroom. They want to go home. They're more likely to want to be more involved time-wise and commitment-wise. Which would be an argument against hiring the woman who has been a stay-at-home mom, but there's also an argument against hiring the man. Because, as I said, usually it's very unusual for a guy to take 5 years off to be a stay-at-home dad. And so it does make one wonder, is this truly just because he wants to be a good feminist husband, or is it because he was fired a bunch, or he was really doesn't give a crap about work, he's burnt, or is in the case of in this role play that I did, he's simply burned out, which is something that would not appear otherwise. You know, 5 years ago, he just couldn't stand work anymore, and he was sick and tired of the corporate routine or the nonprofit BS or the government BS or whatever, and so he decided to take off. Would you be honest, really be honest, would you be by, if there were two equal candidates, one who was took 5 years off to be a stay-at-home mom, the other was took 5 years off to be a stay-at-home dad, you're now making a hiring choice, would you have a preference in either direction, all things equal?
I really don't think so. I think we clearly would be talking with previous employers to find out where this person was in his employment and how he was feeling about it and what kind of a job he or she was doing. And if either one of them were described by their previous employer as not really happy in the job, not really motivated, that would be a huge negative. But I don't think it would be any worse if the candidate was male than female.
Yeah, I think this. I agree with you. Let me not just disagree. But first of all, 5 years now, invariably, employers. If there was a person who took a stay-at-home 5 years to be stay-at-home dad or mom, I would assert that my bosses are all gone, they're no longer there, whatever, and I would do to what I could, and if I had been a burnout, I would do what I could to finesse that. So I worry, and also so many employers are not precluded by either union rules or employment rules or the lawyers to not give any references at all. They say yes, he left here, yeah, no, he didn't. Voluntarily or not, but they're not allowed to say he was a burnout. So I think in the year 2016, relying on those references is not going to be very effective. Do you buy that?
Someone can say that, oh, this person is gone, but that doesn't stop us from calling and saying, and do you know where so-and-so is now? Can you tell him that we are trying to call and do a reference check on somebody? There are ways of talking to people and getting a pretty good sense whether they are. When they say, the only thing I can tell you is date of employment, that's a red flag right away.
Well, but there's some of the really corporations and nonprofits and government agencies have those rules. They're only allowed to state the facts. So anyway, you know what? We've explored this part enough, you and I. This is a great time to bring in our listeners. Dear listeners, you are listening to Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. We are talking about the question of the risks and rewards of being a stay-at-home dad, and especially as it pertains to career, but also life. So I'm really eager to hear, and I'm sure Barbara is as well, eager to hear what you have to say. Ideally, I'd love this, if you were a stay-at-home dad yourself and what your experience has been like, and especially if you've tried to get back in the workplace, or if you were an employer, would you have, if you can be as honest as you can, would you have a bias? Some people, let me one more thing. You know, many people have a bias toward somebody who was a stay-at-home mom or stay-at-home dad. We all like people like us. So if I were a stay-at-home mom or a stay-at-home dad myself, and I've gone back in the workplace, and I see an applicant who was one too, I'm going to may give a positive bias toward that person, thinking that person's got more balance. Balance is the magic word these days. work-life balance. And a guy, I want, if I'm a woman, I want a feminist guy working for me. And if this guy stayed home for 5 years so his wife could pursue her career, and I'm a feminist woman, that's a plus for me. So I don't mean to imply that it's only a risk or a downside in being a stay-at-home dad. There are upsides and downsides, but what, now I want to hear your side. Your thoughts about stay-at-home dads, pros, cons, your experiences, your opinions. The phone number here, work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco on KALW, 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Barbara, any thoughts?
I think the other negative about being a stay-at-home parent is, while it may sound very easy to say, I'm going to keep up, I'm going to take classes, I'm going to join a book group, many of the professional classes occur during the day. And the whole point of being a stay-at-home parent is that you're home. So you don't have those opportunities to get out. And at the end of a day with one or more small children, you're pretty exhausted. And the notion of dragging yourself out to attend a class and having the capability of being alert enough to absorb what's being taught is another challenge.
We've got callers coming called right in, so let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco. What's on your mind?
Am I on?
You are.
I was a stay-at-home dad for the first 3 years of my daughter's life, not by choice, but because I had been laid off from a position and I wasn't able to find work, well, due to the economy,
yep.
due to my age, due to so forth.
Yep.
And what I have to say is that a lot of what you're saying strikes me somewhat as nonsense, because during the time when I was a stay-at-home dad, there'd be many periods of time during the day when I had the time to myself. There's napping, there's preschool, there's, if you're lucky enough to have grandparents or friends nearby who will watch your kids. It was not nonstop work. And it also, while it's exhausting, it's a commitment. You have a kid, you're going to be exhausted. That's the way. If you want to deal with it, you deal with it. So what I did was I did some freelance. I took courses online from Coursera or whatever. And by the time I was able to, I went out and I found work. You just can't stop moving. If you're going to have a kid, it's a commitment to do a lot of work. And so I think it's nonsense, the idea that a stay-at-home person is basically doing nothing but tending to their kid. It's just not true.
It's a very valid point. Barbara, the way the media portrays parenting, because they really want to make, frankly, single, they want to make stay-at-home moms feel like their job is a full-time job. Our caller here says that what I, you know, that side of the argument that I made is nonsense, and that you made is nonsense. From your perspective, as somebody who, as a parent and who knew a lot of stay-at-home moms, how much time really is work, and how much downtime is there when the kid's at school, and you know, is there time for, you know, the Pilates and the yoga and taking classes and chatting on the phone and soap operas and the rest of it? Or is it, what's your sense of not just what this person said, but the overall average truth?
Well, first, I want to thank the caller for calling in, because that's a great perspective.
Yes. Thank you. Yeah, I want to thank you for the call. Barbara,
continue. I don't have a sufficiently realistic experience doing that. I was only out for 6 weeks, and in those 6 weeks, I could barely get dressed. And maybe I didn't do it long enough and didn't get into the right groove, or maybe because it was only the first 6 weeks with an infant, it's very different than when a child is older and has that opportunity to go to preschool and do things independently, which does leave some time during the day. In the first 6 weeks, I have to say, I didn't have 10 seconds. I mean, literally at 3 in the afternoon, I was still in my bathrobe,
sure,
wondering how is it that I didn't get to take a shower.
Yeah.
So I appreciate his perspective, and it's probably way more valid than mine.
Okay, great. And it comports, frankly, with mine. I was making both, trying to make both sides of the argument. But yes, in the real world that I've seen, you know, like, for example, when I am very, because I am self-employed, I will often, and I see clients in the evening, so I take breaks during the day to take hikes and go out to lunch and whatever. And I'm seeing many many and their moms, stay-at-home moms with their babies, chatting with their friends, going around Lafayette Reservoir, or sitting there having a leisurely lunch, and so, you know, with their, you know, 3 or 4 year old. And yes, occasionally they're crying, but very often they are not working nonstop. So yes, the caller's perspective was a useful added one. We have lots of lines lighted up, so let's go right back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko. What is your perspective on the issue of stay-at-home dads?
Good morning. Am I on the air?
You are.
Okay. I've been a stay-at-home, full-time stay-at-home dad since July of 2000.
Mm.
I have 13 and 16-year-old sons in private school who went through co-op nursery schools. And I'm surprised I got through the toddler and early elementary school age. It was all hands on deck, and I didn't have the benefit of aunts or uncles or grandparents, but created a community, and I actually applied for a local job here. I had a second interview on Tuesday and waiting to hear tomorrow for a 30-hour position because I'm still doing it. But I so identify with those early years, man. It was heavy lifting, but satisfying, and I'm really lucky enough to have a partner who made great money and loves her career and handed these wonderful children off to me. But It was a grind, but I still, I get to go to the gym occasionally. I get a bit of a life back, but when somebody's hurt, go to Kaiser, sick, then that spotlight is back on me as, heavy care provider again, which I'm fine with. I'm used to it, and I'm really good at my job,
What's motivating? You say you're now applying for a 30-hour job. Was this the first job you've applied for, or have you made significant efforts? And has your being a long-term stay-at-home dad been an asset or a liability?
The motivating thing now is we're staring straight down the barrel of college. I have a junior in high school, so we want to start throwing some savings at that. It has been tough living in San Francisco on a single income.
Yeah.
And my wife, she makes good money, and we've made the sacrifices in order to make this thing work. I work for TaskRabbit. I did a little bit of part-time here and there, but I don't have that set of skills that I can just work at the house or, tech write or this. I didn't have that sort of training.
Well, I wish you the best. I'm going to let you go because all the lines are lighted up, but I wish you the best luck in that job, and you feel free maybe a couple of months from now, whether you get this job or not, to report back on, you'll may get a sense having, if you've been more serious about looking for a job over the next few months, a sense of whether having been a stay-at-home dad has been a plus, a minus, or a neutral. Feel free to call back, and I do thank you for calling Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko. Let's go back.
I appreciate the honesty and wish you the best of luck with the potential new job.
Yeah. Barbara, anything you want to add, or should we go to the phones?
No.
Let's go back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko. What's on your mind?
Hi.
Hi.
I'm the mom who went to work, and my husband stayed home with two kids.
Right.
Who are now going to be 9 and going to be 3.
Okay.
And part of that decision was based on cultural differences between he and I, but also as the...
What do you mean by, before you go on, what do you mean by cultural differences between he and I?
My husband's from Zimbabwe.
Okay.
And he had some concerns about leaving an infant with someone he didn't know, like a family member.
Okay.
So he and I made the decision, also based on how expensive childcare is in San Francisco, to stay home. And it has, making that sacrifice was good for our family in the long run, but it has really impacted him in his pursuit for other jobs. He had a really good blue-collar job when he told his employers that he was going to quit to stay home and take care of his son. He was hoping that he would be able to return, and that didn't happen. And so basically he's been working in retail part-time, and it's been really challenging for him to get back into the field that he was in before.
Anyway, Barbara, you have anything to add, or should I just thank the caller?
No, I think that's a realistic perspective.
Yep,
it's a sacrifice.
Indeed. Thank you so much for the call. I appreciate it greatly.
Thank you for your show.
Of course. Back to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko. What is on your mind?
Hello.
Hi.
Hi there. I have a slightly different perspective, having been raised by a father who was a stay-at-home.
Great, just great. Please, I'm eager, all ears.
And it's an unusual story because when my parents divorced when I was 13, and this was in 1961, a very long time ago, I asked my mother why she didn't divorce him sooner, and she said, well, somebody has to stay home and raise the children. And my father was a house husband in the 50s and the 60s. My mother was a hard-driving businesswoman, a Holocaust survivor. My father was very laid-back and soft, loved kids. And so it was a great match for a very long time. As a matter of fact, every Mother's Day, I sent my father a Mother's Day card. Because he was so maternal, whereas my mother wasn't particularly inclined that way. And so he stayed home and raised three children while she built four different businesses at one time.
You know, I've heard a lot of these stories. You know, we kind of imagine that it was the uprising of the women's movement that created it. But I've heard of a lot of stories of non-traditional gender roles before the feminist movement, and yours is a perfect example of it.
Yeah, and that's exactly what I say. It's very different from a lot of the other stories. And he was pre-feminist before feminism.
Right. And
that's exactly what it was.
Yeah, there's a meme that says that all men before 1967 or whatever were sexist pigs who just wanted to keep women barefoot and pregnant, but that there were many exceptions. You think that's a fair statement?
He was a perfect example of it. So at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, when all the mothers would stand outside the school to pick up their kids and it would be raining and they'd have their galoshes with them, my father would be the only male in the group. And he was totally comfortable with that role, and the women loved him. No one thought that it was odd for whatever reason.
Interesting. Now, there we go. Now, how about yourself as an adult now? Do you have, I know you don't have, you have no alternative to compare it against, but in what ways was having a very nurturing, gentle, stay-at-home dad as a father, how has that affected you personally and at work?
Well, I'm as independent as my mother, and but not as hard-driving, but have been compared to her. And I also have that soft maternal side, though I chose not to have children because I felt it would be too complicated because I was a careerist. I spent a good 45 years building my businesses and my career. And but in terms of the choices I make in terms of my relationships with men, I find that I get along extremely well with men who are very similar to my father. They have a soft maternal side. They're artistic. They're not as hard-driving as my mother. So he was a role model for the type of men that I find that I'm compatible with.
I have one more question for you. Now, you said you've been doing this for 40 years, building businesses, so you have a lot of perspective. If we could press rewind on your life, and you're now 20 years old or something like that, knowing what you know now, would you have been, as to use your term, careerist, built a business or whatever? Would you have done more work-life balance? Would you have been a stay-at-home dad? Would you have had children, not children? Not that we can generalize from you, but I'm curious as to your personal thoughts.
I think what you're asking is, would I have done it differently?
Yeah.
Is that what you're
Yeah, kind
ask?
Of, right.
I'm sorry?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think about it. I have, I think Edith Piaf once said, je ne regrette pas. I have no regrets. And because the choices I made, I own them, I'm responsible for them, and sometimes I look back and I say, well, I might have done it differently, but actually I'm very comfortable at this point in my life. I'm in my third act. I feel that live my life with integrity, so I'm comfortable with that.
Thank you very much for calling Work With Marty. Did you, Barbara, is there anything you wanted to add before I said goodbye to the caller?
No, I'm just, I'm curious, what was it like as a child having a stay-at-home dad in an era where that was pretty uncommon?
Well, you know, it's a slightly different experience. First of all, I'm from a working-class background. I'm also from a Holocaust survivor background. I had no family besides my immediate family. So that was my reality. I didn't know anything else. I was also raised in an almost exclusively Jewish environment. And this may be a cultural thing, but the men are a little softer in some ways. And they didn't have some of the same perhaps the same approaches that other cultures might have in terms of masculinity.
Yep.
So it wasn't considered so out of the norm to have a father who was nurturing and maternal like that. I had other friends growing up whose fathers were like that as well.
Anyway, thank you.
Interesting, because I can't remember anybody that I grew up with who had a father who stayed home as the primary caregiver.
Me neither, but I think, and my father was not particularly nurturing. He was just exhausted. He would work every
Mine
day
too.
And all night. And we're, you know, I am a child of Holocaust survivor, so I can relate. But some of the other men were hard. They were, and some were gentle. I don't know. Anyway, thank you for the call, Barbara. Let's capstone this part of the conversation. What is, take a, you know, don't necessarily recapitulate anything you said, but let's say right now I was to ask you, what are your thoughts about being a stay-at-home dad, since that's the topic today, that you would like to share with our listeners?
I think it's such an individual thing that one can't even have generalizable thoughts. It so depends on the kind of mom and the kind of dad, what kind of individual people they are, whether they are hard-driving, more maternal, less maternal, what their aspirations are, what their financial situation is. I think the perspective that we got from a number of San Francisco callers is it is so expensive to have childcare today that when one parent is interested and willing to stay home, that makes financial sense rather than trying to provide that kind of childcare so that the second parent can go to work. I think it's entirely individual, and I think from an employer perspective, we're looking at skills and abilities and experience. And for the first caller who said, I took courses on Coursera, well, you could be taking all kinds of courses, many of which would be totally irrelevant to our workplace. But if you were really keeping up and you had practical experience, then it wouldn't count against you. Depends what kind of job you're looking for. So I think every factor in this is very individual.
I agree, completely individual. And the only one aspect of the individual, that individualization that I would add, is every decision we make has an opportunity cost, which is what would we otherwise be doing? If you were like there was the first caller who basically said he didn't really have a lot of skills and or he's doing TaskRabbit or whatever, and so given that his choice is going to clean people's houses or whatever, not that that's unworthy work, but given, you know, that, which is low pay and low status and perhaps low stimulation and low sense of making a difference in the world versus being a stay-at-home parent, the decision becomes, you know, the scales tip toward being a stay-at-home parent. If you're a cardiologist or you have the gift of being an ethical nonprofit manager, or you are a brilliant entrepreneur, keeps coming up with great business ideas and coming up with new products, then clearly it's very different. So the other piece would be is what is the opportunity cost? And I only thing I do want to say, though, I do think that most employers would, in even though the unemployment rate is low, as I've said it many times, for all good jobs, almost all good jobs, there are many applicants. And so somebody who's got something that raises questions, that may have, the questions may be answerable, but if you, especially if it's a guy where it's uncommon to take years off to be a stay-at-home dad, you are going to incur a price. Guaranteed to incur a price? No. Will you decrease your chances of getting a good job within a reasonable amount of time? Yes. So you need to weigh both the two things, your opportunity cost now, that is, what would you otherwise be doing if you weren't a stay-at-home dad, and two, are you willing to accept the cost of the likely risk of going back into the workplace? And that work is not the only factor. It has to be weighed against, as I said, some people believe that raising their children is the best thing they ever did in their life. So, and others find it's an exhausting hassle and not quite so wonderful, but somewhere in the middle. You need to weigh the opportunity costs. All right, Barbara, anything else you want to say? I always like to give you the last word. Other last thing, or is that a good way to end it?
That's a good way to end it.
Okay. I now want to give out the phone number for any of you who have any kind of a work-related problem. What we do on this show is, a core purpose is workovers. No pummeling involved, but whether you're a clerk or a CEO, 16 or 76, self-employed, employed by government, nonprofit, or a company, you have a business idea you want to run by me or Barbara, those are all good reasons to call. I usually can help. The price is certainly right. Zero. The phone number here, work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko and KELW, 415-841 415-841-4134. That's 415-841-4134. Barbara, I want to give you a choice as to which of two topics you want to talk about while waiting for calls to come in. Oh no, they're coming in already. So I think we're not even going to do that. I think we're just going to go to the calls and do a workover. So yeah, welcome to Work with Marty Nemko and Barbara Nemko. What's on your mind? How can we help?
Oh goodness, I didn't realize I'd be on the radio system. Thank you.
You're welcome,
Marty. I have kind of a similar but different issue around staying at home.
Okay.
And I'm trying to transition to the workforce. I've been on disability for 2 decades for depression and PTSD, and I'm wondering what your opinion is. And I've done volunteer work within that span, and I wonder what would be the best way to transition back into the workforce, given that I haven't worked. I've done a lot of spiritual stuff, but essentially I don't really have any employment to speak of, and I don't really want to be out of that. My disabilities, when I go out into the workforce, the only option that I've thought about is to go back to school and reconnect in the academic setting with people who can refer me to internships and whatnot to get back into the workforce that way. What are your thoughts? Any other strategies that I can consider?
Yes, but I have answered this question many times, so I'm very interested in seeing if Barbara wants to take a first shot at it, because she may provide something different than what previous listeners have heard. Barbara, what would you do if you were in her shoes?
I guess it depends on what kind of a job you want and what kind of work you did before you went out on disability.
Mm-hmm. I did HR before, but I'm not really that interested anymore in going back into the corporate workforce. I think I'm more inclined to do nonprofit or to be, I'm older now, so I want to be in service and do some, make a difference. And I'm not, I have creative talents and I have some leadership, but the problem is the volunteer work that I did, over the years has been so long ago that, I'm kind of starting from zero, in terms of putting together a resume. And I don't really know quite how to cover up the, I'm not embarrassed about it, but it just, I know that it doesn't translate well when you're out into the workforce and you really have 20 years of what? And they're going to ask questions, and I don't really want to tell them that I've been disabled. So I don't really know quite how to get over that, except to go back to school and incorporate my volunteer work under, an internship that, under an internship that is repeating, it kind of gives me recurrent credit for the volunteer work I've done in the past, but it also enhances it with the academic studies.
Barbara, do you want to try to take one more?
This is not my field of expertise, but it would seem to me if you've done volunteer work, if you know what particular area you're interested in working in, I would start by going and talking to them, and even starting as a volunteer, but learning everything I could about that office and how it runs, and finding some problem or some issue within the work environment that needs solving that you think you have the skills to solve, at which point you could transfer to becoming an employee. But again, this is not my field.
Okay, I'm now going to make an argument for what you should do, and then. But it's just my first crack, and I want you to be honest in telling me whether this feels like you or not. Your 20 years of experience you've had in getting well enough, struggling through PTSD and depression, is very valuable experience. It is your most valuable experience.
Mm-hmm.
When you're saying otherwise, you are starting at zero. You're not starting at zero when you're dealing with people with PTSD or depression. You know it better than anybody, better than I could ever know it in my entire life, no matter how much I've read about it, and I've read a ton about it. You know it because you've lived it. You've struggled with it. You've hated it. You've had wins, you've had losses, you've had setbacks. It seems to me, and I just think karmically and ethically in every possible way, it's pragmatically stupid, literally stupid, to go and try to hide it. Because if they're going to seriously consider you, it's going to come out. So I go the exact opposite route. I go and absolutely fully disclose. I identify as many nonprofits and government agencies as you can that address issues of depression and PTSD, community mental health agencies, nonprofits, whatever. Since you say you don't want to go back in the corporate world, fine. And you are going to either write or call every one of those entities, or you're first going to, if you have any kind of a network, and usually people who are depressed and with PTSD don't have a huge network, but if you have some friends or relatives, show them the list of those nonprofits and government agencies, say, do you by any chance know anybody there? And then you, with complete honesty, tell your exact story. Say that you feel you're at ground zero, except for having struggled with and made significant progress in battling depression and PTSD. And while you still have some issues, there's a lot, you believe that 20 years is very valuable. You don't sound like you need to make a lot of money, but you want to make some money and get back in the workplace and be of service. If you say that enough times to your friends and to those organizations, they may make you start with an internship, but or they may pay give you a paying job. But that's the best way to get back into the career, into the work world, and make a difference. I would not go back to school. You sound like you make it sound like you're older. If you go back to school in some kind of a counseling-ish related thing, service-related thing, you're going to take normally being real older people a lot longer to complete their degrees, and in the whole field of counseling and helping, it's very credentialed. It'll require a master's degree, 3,000 supervised hours, and then you're going to be this 60-year-old newbie who's trying to get hired after been unemployed for 20 years. That's not a great investment of your time. The great investment of your time is to identify a list of those organizations, show that to your friends, see if you can get it in. If not, still honestly, completely honestly conveying that to them. And that is my best shot at you getting a launchpad job or launchpad internship without having to go to a bunch of schools merely so you can get an internship. Does that make, honestly, what is your reaction to my honest reaction?
It sounds great. My hesitation, I'm having trouble doing a cost benefits analysis of if I do the route that you're suggesting, it's the quickest way to get, you know, money on the table. However, it's less money, and I don't really know if it would be worth putting in the time to get, like, say, a BA in something. And then would a BA, would spending a couple of years to finish my BA garner me a greater return on that by giving me a
probably
higher
not.
Salary?
When you're talking about both zero income for the 2 to 4 years it'll take you to get the bachelor's, then you're one of the zillions of people. We are the most educated people in the world here in the Bay Area. You're going to be spending a lot of time that you have with zero income and paying out thousands and thousands of dollars. Right now, I can't get past the Atlantic study that showed that 53% of all college graduates are doing work that they could have gotten out of high school and with a huge amount of debt. And that's for 22-year-olds who are fresh-faced and don't have 20 years as suffering with depression and PTSD. So while anything can happen statistically, when you talk about risk-reward, you have a much better chance before I committed to that of going and doing my approach, trying to get a job now. And then, certainly, if you want to grow and keep learning, take a course in whatever it is that will be directly relevant to what kind of work you're doing or internship you're doing. Mm-hmm. But I would not commit those years and money at this point.
Even if financial aid is available to me, the Pell Grants.
Yeah, they're crappy. What are Pell Grants? They're small. They're a drop in the bucket. All those people who have $100,000 in debt and $200,000 in debt all got Pell Grants, but they still, you know, the rest is going to be loans that are paid at market rate, basically, and that cannot be discharged through bankruptcy. Don't think Pell Grants cover a tiny percentage of the cost of college.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks, Marty. I'm gonna sit with that. You and Barbara are really great. Thank you so much.
That's right. Barbara, anything you want, again, I always like to give you the last word. Anything you want to add, Barb?
Well, I think you've made some really good points, and I know there are lots of programs now for veterans with PTSD, and I think the whole field of PTSD is opening up. So I know someone who has just gone through training to incorporate that aspect of work into her work as a life coach. So it's an opening field.
Yeah. Anyway, good point. Thank you for the call. All our lines are lighted up. Let's go to the phones. Welcome to Work with Marty Nemco, Barbara Nemco. What is on your mind? How can we help?
Hi, not looking for specific advice, but would like to get your observations.
Okay.
About a huge problem that affects older workers, and I'm speaking specifically about very senior, experienced talented managers from the corporate world. We are expert in our fields. We have tons of experience very often at high levels. But the logic of the corporation in America today is you want to reduce costs, and very often they chop at the top. And I can't count the number of friends and peers of mine, again, at the top of our profession, corporate managers, experts in a variety of fields, who have been unemployed for 6, 12, 18 months.
Absolutely.
What's the, not looking for advice, because we, you know, we're experienced guys. We know how to deal with this. And we've been on the other side of the table. We've laid people off. So we're not looking for sympathy. But are you seeing any changes in our society, specifically in the world outside of the corporate ranks, nonprofits, where there is an appetite for hiring somebody with 25 years of experience who's been a VP or senior director of a major corporation? I don't see it. Maybe I'm just missing something, but there's a huge, huge problem in our society in that hundreds of thousands of very talented people are left out in the cold, and their talents are just not being used.
Yep.
What are you seeing out there?
Absolutely. I'm not seeing that change at all. I'm seeing more and more older workers because we have not saved enough for retirement. So even if we wanted to retire, we can't. So you've got this enormous pool of people who have been in the workforce an awful long time. And I know it's politically incorrect, but you sound like a white male, and they're disproportionately white males who are over 50. And they have given it all to corporate America or whatever. And now, really, white males are really not there's no checkbox that the employer can check. And so they are, at least in my experience with my clients, having a very, very unusually hard time. And what they do are the following things. They either...
I just say quickly, you are absolutely right. Everything you say checks out. The logic is, look, we don't have enough women. Sorry, but you're an overrepresented majority.
Exactly.
You're disposable. We are always the first to be fired. And it applies to Asian males as well.
Exactly correct. But that's been my experience. And so the best paths are, in general, are the following. You focus on mature industries. High tech isn't going to want to touch you. Biotech isn't going to want to touch you. Environment isn't going to want to touch you because all the young people want to do that. But there are old mainline industries that are more age independent, like food, transportation, banking, insurance. All of those industries are less likely to insist on young people, both because the technology hasn't changed as much and because the culture in the workplace isn't what I call the Frisbee culture. So focusing on getting either, so strategy one is focusing on mature industries. Focus two is being an interim temp executive. There are these executive temp agencies where you go in for 3 to 6 months while they're trying to get a permanent position where they can hire somebody temporarily who's not going to be vying for the position, and that at least gets you a series of temp jobs. And three is you join up together. The three of you or four of you join together in creating some kind of, using all that amazing brain trust you have in some business that is going to serve older people where your age is a plus. Whether it is in those, whether it be managing assisted living facilities or an ethical insurance brokerage for aiming for people who are 60 plus, you know, something that would enable you to, instead of complaining about it, triumphing over it by bonding together. What's your reaction to that?
Those are great suggestions. I'm so glad I stumbled on this program. I've never heard that from anybody, and I wish there's some way you could follow up with me, because I can think of three guys in particular who, one's a neuroscientist with an MBA and PhD from very prestigious schools. He's not thinking those ways. He's trying to create his cool app.
Ridiculous.
He's sitting at home by himself.
Ridiculous. And you have to join up. That's where old people don't get it. Collaboration is necessary. The world is more collaborative. You guys need to team up. And guys, especially white guys, do not do a good job of collaborating and teaming up. You guys have got to team up. The world. This is a world of collaboration today. Those of you listening to the show, never I knew that you'd be my perfect client. Why don't the three of you come and spend an hour with me? It won't cost you that much. It cost you $175 an hour. Big deal. It'll cost you relatively nothing. And maybe we can get you guys a plan. Email me.
Well, I'm sorry. I just stumbled on you on the radio. What's your name? And,
I'm Marty Nemko. mnemko@comcast.net. M is my first initial. Mnemko, N-E-M-K-O @comcast.net.
Super. We'll follow up. Thank you so much.
Okay, take care. All right. By the way, I while I'm at this unusual thing of promoing, I am giving a talk at the Commonwealth Club, my ninth time back. I am gratified they've asked me back for my ninth time this Thursday at 6 p.m. at the Commonwealth Club. I will be talking about, yes, how to survive, get good work in this gig economy, where everything is, jobs seem to get gig. But I'm also going to talk about the big topics they don't let me talk about on the show. I'm going to talk about some bold ideas for solving the Palestinian-Israeli crisis, what to do about our $20 trillion in debt, why education, despite spending number one per capita in the world, we flounder near the bottom among developed nations. I'm going to talk about terrorism, and I think a bold, this one is quite liberal approach to dealing with terrorism. I would love your coming. Just go to commonwealthclub.org, commonwealthclub.org, and register and come by and say hi afterwards. 5:30 is a nice reception for me. I appreciate that. 5:30 to 6, and so you can get a chance to chat with me informally. And then 6 o'clock, I will talk, and there'll be plenty of time for Q&A, because I don't believe in just lecturing at people. I really like input from folks. So look forward to seeing you then. Barbara, we only have like 2 minutes left. What are your thoughts about the older worker, male, female, white, Asian, black, I don't care. What are your thoughts about the no BS thoughts about older workers looking for a job?
We just hired someone who had retired and after working temp and part-time jobs decided that that was silly. She might as well come back and work full-time, and we hired her joyfully because she has a world of experience and is very energetic. So depending on the position that you're trying to fill, sometimes an older worker who hasn't been out of it for too long can be exactly what you're looking for.
And Barbara, you're over 50, and you fortunately your
yes,
job
I
is
am.
your job is very secure. You've got another 4 years in your term. You're going to keep running again and again, keep running unopposed. That's all great. But let's pretend that you got fired. You got laid off. And so now Barbara, who's post-50, and while you do love an educational technology, you're hardly a technologist, so you're not Ms. Technology. Your entire life has been in education. What would Barbara Nemco do if she were looking for a job at this point?
I would contact everybody I know and see what's available in their organizations that they think I might be well suited for.
Just give a 30-second, the show's almost over, give a 30-second pitch for how would you describe who you are and what you're looking for? What would be your elevator pitch to those people in your network?
Whoa, I hadn't thought about that at all. That I'm told I am an inspiring leader who can work with people who may not be excited about the direction that we want to go in, but I have the ability over a not too long period of time to help people see how it could be helpful, not just for the clients or kids that they're working with, but for themselves as well. And that we end up moving forward with people saying, thank you for making me see why this was so great. I love it.
Great. What I loved about that is the human. It wasn't canned. It wasn't a single canned job seeker phrase. It felt real. And Barbara, thank you as always for contributing mightily to work with Marty Nemco. And I really always appreciate it. And that is Work with Marty Nemco and Barbara Nemco for this week. I want to thank my board operator, Joanne Marr, and of course all of you for listening and calling in. Please join me again next Sunday at 11. I will do workovers on callers, and I'll talk with Pei Wang on artificial intelligence, the promise and the perils for careers for all of us. Until next Sunday, this is Marty Nemco for Barbara Nemco, reminding you that we find comfort among those who agree with us, growth among those who don't.